time to begin. I think our clock's a little fast. I think it's still about a minute till or whatever, but it tends to do that, and we have to set it back every now and then. Good to see everybody out. Got some folks that's not here, but I know people are sick and out of town and this and that. Revelation chapter 21 is where we are. Last week we did the first 8 verses, and we went through the last of those verses pretty quickly. So I don't want to go back and teach what I taught last week, but there's some things that we didn't point out that I'd like to go back and look at before we go on to the rest of the chapter. So in chapter 18, we have the destruction of the great harlot. And in chapter 19, we have the destruction of the beast and the false prophet. And then in chapter 20, we have the destruction of Satan. Right. Verse 10. The devil who deceived them was cast into the lake of fire and brimstone where the beast and the false prophet are, and they will be tormented day and night forever and forever. And then at the end of chapter 20, we have what? The judgment scene, right? The one who sat on the white throne, and the dead were raised, and everyone was judged. There was nobody that wasn't judged, both great and small. And those who were not written in the Lamb's Book of Life were cast into the lake of fire. And then, of course, those who were written in the Lamb's Book of Life are now with God in heaven, because what happened to the earth and the universe? Dissolved, burned up, no more. So all the physical things are gone. Those who were unfaithful or in hell, and the redeemed are with God. And that's what chapter 21 is about. I want us to go back to Daniel chapter 7. We've been back to Daniel a few times. Daniel chapter 7. There's a reason for that, and you'll see it here in a minute. If you remember, Daniel was shown visions to show him what was coming in the future. Daniel chapter 7. And he was shown the 4 kingdoms that would come and go, and the kingdom that would come that would last forever, being the church. But he also had visions, so let's look at chapter 7, and let's begin with verse 9. I beheld till the thrones were cast down, and the Ancient of Days did sit, whose garment was white as snow. And the hair of his head like the pure wool, his throne was like the fiery flame, and his wheels as burning fire. A fiery stream issued and came forth from before him. Thousands ministered unto him, and 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him. The judgment was set, and the books were opened. And I beheld them because of the voice of the great words which the horn spake, and I beheld even till the beast was slain, and his body destroyed, and given to the burning flame. As concerning the rest of the beast, they had their dominion taken away, yet their lives were prolonged for a season and a title. So this is very similar to the end of chapter 20, right? It's a picture of the judgment, of the judgment throne. So Acts chapter 17, I think verse 30 and 31, when Paul is on Mars Hill and he's preaching to the idolatrous worshipers, he says, the times of ignorance God overlooked, but now he commands all people everywhere to repent, because he has fixed a day on which he will judge the world in righteousness by a man whom he has appointed. Who is that man? Jesus Christ, right? And of this he has given assurance to all by raising him from the dead. So everybody, both small and great, has appeared before God. They've been judged. They're now either in heaven or they're in hell. All of physical things that we know of are dissolved. chapter 21, verse 3, as we said last week, I think is key. And I heard a loud voice from the throne saying, "Behold, the dwelling place of God is with man. He will dwell with them, and they will be his people, and God himself will be with them as their God." So in his vision, John sees a new heaven and a new earth, because the old heaven and the old earth has passed away. And we went to 1 Peter chapter 3, and we read those verses. And we know, or we should know, in 1 Peter chapter 3, there were those who were scoffing at the fact that Jesus was going to return and that there was going to be a judgment. And they were like, today's just like yesterday and the day before. So what? Where's all this going? And Peter responds with the Lord, one day is as what? 1,000 years. And 1,000 years is one day. So I think the key there is, in those verses 5 through 13, there's a new heaven and a new earth. And Revelation 21 and verse 1, I think, is pointing to the same time that Peter prophesied of. And Isaiah 65 and verse 17, and Isaiah chapter 66 and verse 22, also talk about the new heavens and the new earth. And in that context, it's talking about the coming of Christ and the church. And so it's a change from the Jewish state, which was the law of Moses, and a new state where God is ushering in the Messianic kingdom. And that's what Isaiah's talking about, and that was Isaiah 65, verse 17, and 66, and verse 22. So the context there is a change is coming, and it's going to be a change from the old law to the new law. There's going to be a new way of thinking, a new way of doing things. So I think Isaiah and Peter are both referring to the same thing that John is talking about in the beginning of chapter 21. Then John saw this holy city, Jerusalem, descending from God. And so it's descending from God. It's of divine origin. Now, this is the holy city, the new Jerusalem. It's not the church on earth. We talked about the fact that this is the church. This is the redeemed. But it's not the church on earth, because you think about it. They're going to see him face to face. Well, we have a relationship with God, do we not? But it's a long-distance relationship. Well, in this context, now remember, this is a vision, but it's talking about things that are going to come in the future. The redeemed will see God face to face. And we also talked last week about the fact that there's no more sorrow, there's no more death, there's no more crying, there's no more pain. Well, do we have that in the church today? Absolutely, because we live on earth, right? We hurt. People die. There's sorrow, there's pain, there's crying. So this is not talking about the church on earth. This is talking about the church triumphant in heaven. Does that make sense? So keep that in mind as we're studying this. Keep in mind this is figurative, okay? But it's talking about things that are going to come in a certain way and certain things. And so this is the spiritual home of the redeemed. They're going to be with God for eternity. And we went back last week at Hebrews chapter 11 and verse 10, that Abraham is looking for a city whose builder and maker is God. And we also went to chapter 13, where the writer of Hebrews said, here being on the earth, we have no continuing city. Well, we don't have a continuing city here, do we? It's just temporary. But we're looking for a continuing city, and that continuing city is what? It's heaven, right? So this is the eternal abode of the church triumphant in heaven, dwelling with God for forever. So chapter 21 and chapter 22 are basically what the culmination of the entire Bible, really. It's the culmination of Revelation for sure. But it's actually the culmination of the entire Bible, because it's talking about being in heaven with God. And that's what God has planned from the beginning. And that's what we are planning. And that's why we're living our lives as we live our lives, because we want to be with God in heaven. So John heard from the throne a loud voice that said, "Behold, the tabernacle of God is with men, and he will dwell with them, and they shall be his people, and God himself will be them and be their God." That's repeated over and over and over in Scripture. In Exodus chapter 19, what God promised the children of Israel, "I'll be your God and you'll be my people." And over and over and over we see that. We read a few weeks ago in 2 Corinthians, "Come out from among them, be ye separate, saith the Lord, and touch not the unclean thing, and I'll receive you and be a father to you, and be my sons and daughters, saith the Lord God Almighty." So we see that over and over and over again. And we talked about the fact that God will wipe every tear from their eyes. There will be no more death, no more sorrow, no more crying, no more pain, because all these things have passed away. Again, all the physical is gone. The only thing that remains is the spiritual. Because in verse 5, John said, the one on the throne said, "Behold, I make all things new." All the old things are gone. All the things that we have on this earth that's important are gone. So the only thing that matters is our relationship with God. So this is something new. The old things are gone. This is something new, where things that were do not exist anymore. And he told John, "Write these things down, for they are true and faithful." So we can rest assured that whatever we go through on this earth, no matter whatever trial it is, and these Christians were going through trials and persecution and being killed and famine and those kind of things. But whatever we go through, one day that's going to be gone. And there's going to be a better place in heaven. And that's what we look for. And God's words are faithful and true. If God says it, we believe it, right? And then the one who sat on the throne said, "It is done. It's finished. I am the Alpha and the Omega, the beginning and the end." Now, he said that to John in the beginning of the book, in chapter 1. Chapter 1 and verse 8, verse 11, verse 18 through 20. "I'm the Alpha and the Omega. I'm the beginning and the end. I will give of the fountain of the water of life freely to him who thirsts. He who overcomes shall inherit all things, and I will be his God, and he shall be my son. But the cowardly, the unbelieving, the abominable, the murderers, the sexually immoral, the sorcerers, the idolaters, and all liars will have their part in the lake which burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death." Now, this is not an exhausted list of sins that will keep you out of heaven. Galatians chapter 5 lists several of them. Attitudes, sinful things. But notice, the cowardly is included in that. Liars are included in that list. They won't be in heaven. And we could talk about each one of those. We could talk about sins, but we know. We can't serve God and serve the devil. If we do, we're not going to be face to face with the Lord. So as we continue the chapter, verse 9 through 21, And remember, this is figurative. But let's read them very quickly. And one of the seven angels who had the seven bowls filled with the seven last plagues came to me and talked with me, saying, "Come, I will show you the bride, the Lamb's wife." And he carried me away in the Spirit to a great and high mountain and showed me the great city, the holy Jerusalem, descending out of heaven from God, having the glory of God. And her light was like a most precious stone, like a jasper stone, clear as crystal. And she had a great and high wall and had 12 gates and 12 angels at the gates and names written on them, which were the names of the 12 tribes of the children of Israel. 3 gates on the east, 3 gates on the north, 3 gates on the south, and 3 gates on the west. And the wall of the city had 12 foundations, and on them were the names of the 12 apostles of the Lamb. And he who talked with me had a golden reed to measure the city, its gates, and its wall. And the city is laid out as a square, and its length is as great as its breadth. And he measured the city with a reed, 12,000 furlongs. Its length, breadth, and height are equal. And he measured its wall, 144 cubits, according to the measure of a man, that is, of an angel. And the construction of the wall was of jasper, and the city was pure gold, like clear glass. And the foundations of the wall of the city were adorned with all kinds of precious stones. The first foundation was jasper, the second sapphire, the third chalcedony, the fourth emerald, the fifth sardonyx, the sixth sardis, the seventh chrysolite, the eighth beryl, the ninth topaz, the tenth chrysoprasus, the 11th jasus, and the 12th amethyst. And the 12 gates were 12 pearls. Each individual gate was of one pearl. And the street of the city was pure gold as transparent glass. So one of the angels who had poured out the bowls of wrath on the earth told John, "Come and let me show you the bride, the Lamb's wife." Now, a couple of classes ago, who do we talk about the bride being? The church, right? So he carries John up to this high mountain and he shows him this holy city, spiritual Jerusalem, descending out of heaven, having the glory of God. There's nothing more important about this than having the glory of God. And Ezekiel 40 through 48, we're not going to take time to go read that, but uses a similar vision of the church that is to come, just like Isaiah 65 and 66 does. But he says her light was like a precious stone, like a jasper stone. Now, folks would say that this would be a diamond that's perfect, that's clear, as crystal. And so we see this jasper stone, this diamond, as it was, it's flawless in perfection, clear as crystal, used to describe the beauty of the Lamb, which is the church, okay, the bride of the Lamb, I'm sorry. So we see the church, we see the righteous, we see this bride of Christ in their eternal abode, which is in heaven. And John speaks in the rest of 21 and 22 describing this eternal abode. Now, I want us to remember, this is a vision. This is figurative. Okay? We don't really know what heaven looks like. Is it going to have a street of gold? It may very well. But John is describing heaven in terms that we can comprehend and visualize. You know, as we go through Revelation, we visualize all these things that are happening. He's putting these in terms that we can visualize and we can understand. So it had this high wall, and this wall was about 210 feet high. So nobody's going to get over it, right? And the gates are always open. There are 12 gates, 3 on each side. And it's 12,000 furlongs square. So that means it's 1,500 miles by 1,500 miles by 1,500 miles by 1,500 miles by 1,500 miles. It's a perfect cube. So you wonder, well, how are these people going to get into heaven? Well, it's going to be pretty big, right? All I can say is it going to be 1,500 miles square? I don't know. I know it's going to be big enough for all the redeemed to fit in. And what we need to get out of this is this is the eternal home of the saints. And on the name of these 12 gates was the name of one of the children of the tribes of Israel. And it had 12 foundations. And on these foundations were the names of the 12 apostles. So we have the 12 tribes of Israel. We have the 12 apostles. So we have this representing all the redeemed of all time, right? So these foundations are precious stones. And it's 12 stones high. In other words, you're not going to shake it, right? It's not going to fall. It's firm. It stands fast. It cannot be moved. And I think there's a lesson in that. So we have the old covenant and we have the new covenant represented here in the gates and the foundations. And Ephesians 2:20, we are built on the foundation of the apostles and prophets with Jesus Christ being the what? The chief cornerstone, right? So 1 Corinthians chapter 3 and verse 11, no foundation can any man lay than that which is been laid, and that foundation is Jesus Christ himself, being the Son of God. Okay? So this city is made out of precious materials that man holds as being extremely valuable. We're talking about precious stones. We're talking about a street that's pure gold. We're talking about each of the 12 gates being of one pearl. Pretty big pearl. So the wall is jasper. The entire city is built out of gold. It's so pure that it's translucent almost. Even the light of the city is clear as crystal. So what are we seeing? We're seeing a beautiful place. Perfection. Okay, and that's the thing. We see two things here, really. We see materials that are most precious and of great value. And we see materials that are perfection. They're pure. There's no impurity in them. Can we see a lesson in that? There's nothing in heaven that's going to be impure, right? And the great value to us is not the gold and the precious stones. The great value is what? Being in heaven with God, right? And seeing Him face to face. So these materials are most precious, and everything in heaven is going to be most precious. And in verse 22, he says that there's no temple there. Well, the temple is where God symbolically met with His people, right? When the tabernacle was dedicated, the glory of God filled the tabernacle until the priest could not serve in it. That is symbolically God dwelling with His people. Although we know, and Solomon said this, when Solomon dedicated his temple, the glory of God filled the temple and the priest could not do their service because of the glory of God in the temple. And Solomon said, I know that God can't dwell in this temple, but symbolically, God is with His people in this temple. Well, there's no need of a temple in heaven because who's in heaven? God. So He doesn't need something symbolically to tell me, to tell you that I am symbolically with you because we see Him face to face. He is with us. So there's no need of a temple. And verse 22, the Lord God Almighty and the Lamb are its temple. There's no need of the sun or the moon because the glory, verse 23, of God illuminates heaven. And the Lamb is its light. And the redeemed out of all nations are going to walk in the light. And it says the kings of the earth bring their glory and honor into it. That's a little bit of a difficult passage for me, because we know the kings that gave their kingdoms over to the devil are not there, right? But so is this the kings in the kingdom who were faithful to God who bring their glory into it? Or is the king spiritual royalty that are the redeemed on earth? I don't know. I don't know the answer to that. But let's take it for what it says. And the kings of the earth bring their glory and honor into it. Chapter 5 and verse 10 says, the saints are a kingdom of priests who reign upon the earth. So I don't know. So everything has been laid at the feet of the Lamb, and the Lamb is Christ. Going back to Psalm chapter 110, going to 1 Corinthians chapter 15, Christ is going forth to conquer, and he has conquered. And the last enemy to be destroyed is death, and he has conquered death, and judgment has come. But then again, it says in verse 25, its gates will never be shut. There's no night in heaven. There's no evil. There's nothing to threaten. There's no reason to shut the gates. The gates are open that all, from every tribe, from every nation, who are the redeemed of earth, can come in. And there's nothing that's going to enter that is defiled, an abomination or a lie, verse 27. Only those whose names are written in the Lamb's Book of Life. And they'll dwell with the Lord forever and ever. Again, I don't know what heaven's going to look like. There are some things that I do know. I know it is the eternal dwelling place of the redeemed of God. I know it's going to be beautiful. I know that nothing is going to be there that is an abomination. I know that all the redeemed from all ages are going to be there. Moses is going to be there. Noah's going to be there. Peter's going to be there. All these that were martyred by Rome are going to be there. The men of old are going to be there. People that we know are going to be there. And that should be important to us. People like Elijah, Jeremiah, Ezekiel, they're all going to be there. So the most important thing that I know is that God's going to be there. And I want to be there too. And you want to be there. And that's why we have to overcome the obstacles that get in our way. And we've talked about that. So questions, comments, anything before we go on. I did not do an outline or questions on chapter 21 or 22. But actually the first five, and the whole chapter, but especially the first five verses of chapter 22 fit with chapter 21. We talked about the fact that when this was written, there weren't chapter and verses, right? So this really should have cut off chapter 21 at the end of verse 5. But in reality, chapter 21 and 22 go together. And so, I guess in the first five verses, we could say that this is life in the New Jerusalem. And let's read those five verses. And he showed me a pure river of water of life, clear as crystal, proceeding out of the throne of God and the Lamb. In the middle of its street, and on either side of the river, was the tree of life, which bore 12 fruits, yielding its fruit every month, and the leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations. And there shall be no more curse, but the throne of God and the Lamb shall be in it, and his servants shall serve him, and they shall see his face. His name shall be on their foreheads, and there shall be no night there. They need no lamp nor light of the sun. For the Lord God gives them light, and they shall reign forever and ever. So do you see in these first five verses a beautiful garden? There's the river of life flowing from the throne of God. There's the tree of life on each side of the river of life. So we talked last week about all that was in the Garden of Eden that was lost is regained in heaven. So there's this river of life. There is the tree of life. And we could go to John chapter 4, verses 12 through 14. We could go to John chapter 7, which talks about the fact that these are flowing from the throne of God and the Lamb. We won't take time to read those. But it's a river. It's a river of water that sustains life. Notice it's a river. It's not some little stream that you have to stand in line for and hope by the time that you get up there that there's some water left. It's a river of life, the river of the water of life. And it carries me back to Jesus and the Samaritan woman at the well, because what did he tell her? I'll give you living water where you'll never thirst again. So this is the water of the river of life, because it's plentiful, it flows from the throne of God, because God is the source of life. And in the middle of the street, it would seem, and the river, there's the tree of life. Now, I don't know how to reconcile that, but there's the tree of life that was in the Garden of Eden that was taken away, that is found in heaven, and it perpetually produces fruit. So you live forever and ever and ever. So the leaves of the tree were for the healing of the nations. Now, you remember maybe grandma or whatever making a poultice, and she'd put it on something, you know? Well, they'd make it out of leaves or whatever. So the leaves are for the healing of the nations. I remember my grandmother dipped rooster snuff, and she'd take it, if you got stung by a bee, and she'd put a little bit on it. Well, I don't think it helped anything, but we thought it did. So these leaves are for the healing of the nations, and there's no more curse. Now, when Adam and Eve sinned, there was a curse, right? There was a curse because the ground was cursed and man would have to work out by the sweat of his brow. But there was also the curse that they would die. Well, there's no more curse. There's no more death. So the penalty for sin is no more. And the throne of God and the Lamb are there, and we will serve Him, and we will see Him face to face. I want you to turn back to 1 John chapter 3 and verse 2. 1 John chapter 3 and verse 2. Beloved, now we are the sons of God, and it doth not yet appear what we shall be, but we know that when he shall appear, we shall be like him, for we shall see him as he is. We'll put away this fleshly body, and we'll have a spiritual body, and we will see Christ, and we will see God face to face, and his name will be on their foreheads. Now, we studied about that, right? So there is an identifying mark that we belong to God. Now, it's not a physical mark, right? So the redeemed in heaven belong to God. There's no night there. There's no darkness. There's no need of the sun or the moon, for God gives them light. But there's no darkness there. And there's a lesson in that too. And we shall live and reign with Him forever and ever. And we talk about living forever and ever and ever in heaven. But I think we need to think about the fact that we're not just going to be living there twiddling our thumbs. We're talking about quality of life. And that quality of life is serving God and being with God and rejoicing forever and ever and ever. You know, teaching this class of Revelation. Go ahead, Ruby. Well, physically, no, because physical bodies are gone. I think this is part of being in heaven, spiritual beings with God who have been healed. So that's the only way I can describe it. Because physical things are gone. There's no more physical things. We're spiritual beings. We'll be like Christ, okay? And I don't understand everything that's in these verses and in these chapters, and you don't either, and nobody else does, okay? But just think about the fact there's no more death, there's no more crying, there's no more pain. We're healed spiritually, right? So teaching
all of this is still in the language that a human can understand.
Exactly. Exactly.
We don't have to worry about anything.
That's right. And we don't know what it looks like, right? Okay. So we're going to end there. And we will begin next week at verse 6. There are four warnings given in the rest of the chapter, beginning with verse 6 and going through the end. The warning that the time is near. The warning to heed the message. The warning of adding or taking away. And then the final warning in verses 20 and 21. We'll talk about those next week. Thank you for your attention.